Hey, welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous director, Darcy Weir, whose film, I don't think it's new, but it probably is in his collection. Being Taken is the name of the film, part of the Beyond the Spectrum series. I think I got it right this time. Welcome back, Darcy.
Hey, Simon. Happy to be back. Thanks for having me.
I guess you had a good time last time, since you decided to come back a second time.
Yeah. I like to talk about films and my films and stuff, yeah.
Well, if you want to talk about other people's films, we can do that too, but I was going to discuss your film today.
Okay, let's talk about Being Taken.
Yeah, again, I think before we get into the film, this is your second film which deals with the unknown. The first one was the Sasquatch we talked about, and now you're back talking about alien abduction.
Yeah, a little bit out there. You know, why not just dive right in the deep end? No point in wearing any floaters or trying to do a doggy paddle. Just go right to the deep end. Being Taken is about people that over history have claimed to have been abducted. You know, abducted by off-world beings that we would call aliens. And there's a pretty rich history of it in the world. I mean, if you watch the documentary, you'll probably find stories that came out of Brazil, you know, England, the United States, Mexico. It's everywhere. People describe having these really bizarre experiences, and we try to make sense of it all, and we try to keep a sort of interesting historical approach to it. Is it psychosis? Is it sleep paralysis? Is it really people or extraterrestrial individuals? We don't know, but we're very curious about it.
Okay. I did have a question there before you answered my question, Tom, but why do you do this, make documentaries about, I don't want to say, out ignorant things for other people. Like, we don't know much about Sasquatch. We don't know if this is real or not. So why do you make documentaries about these things?
I think it's important to cover bizarre stories. For me, everything else in the world, you know, when it comes to entertainment, one can turn on the TV and they can watch football, hockey, soccer. They can watch Spider-Man, Superman, you know, the X-Men, whatever. Go up against the forces of evil. For me, the question of whether Sasquatch or are we alone in the universe and are we being visited by our cosmic neighbors? Those questions are existential. But they're very interesting existential questions to me, because if we truly are not alone, not only in the forest, if Sasquatch is walking around somewhere in the depths of the forest, or in the universe, if extraterrestrial beings that are non-human are coming to check us out, like we're some massive sociological experiment taking place, floating around on planet Earth. And these are very interesting concepts for me, and I think it's worth exploring the stories, the true stories that are coming from parts of the world where people say this stuff is happening, or they have experiences where they can prove some of these questions that are being asked.
So do you feel that's your job as a director in this field, to prove these things?
Well, I mean, documentaries are supposed to be pretty unbiased.
I can't agree more, with you there.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the more you watch documentaries these days, they are biased. And if you watch the news, it is biased. And if you have a conversation with somebody about life, it's biased. So I think, to me, it would make sense that we're not alone in the different aspects that are being told in my stories that I'm putting together with various people talking about their experiences and so on. I find there's just as news reporters find the stories credible when they go out on their journalistic endeavors to find out the truth. And I don't want to say that I'm trying to prove that anything is 100% true, but I'm definitely trying to present the best information that come out of some of the credible stories that are surrounding these questions. So my thesis that's built in the documentaries are not only mine. I mean, in this film being taken, I worked with Lee Lustig and I put together a treatment and he and I kind of wrote it together. He did a lot of writing and he would come back to me and I would challenge some stuff and say, okay, but add this and put that. And we collaborate a lot on stuff and he's a great, he has a great voice too. He has a sort of powerful New Jersey deep voice. And I like working with him and basically we, for this documentary, we flew to a UFO conference. Okay. You know, back in the day before coronavirus happened, people would go to conferences all around the world. And at conferences, people would gather and trade ideas. And you would watch presentations and have discussions and learn new things and see what's going on. This conference was called the International UFO Congress, believe it or not. And we went there to meet with somebody who I could probably call a friend right now. His name is Stephen Bassett. Stephen Bassett is the fellow with sort of a black turtleneck on, and he's speaking very candidly about the politics surrounding the disclosure of ET or UFOs in the most public way possible from the government. And he did a whole bunch of hearings at the Washington press conference. And you know, this happened over a few different periods in time. He had John Podesta, who was former advisor to Barack Obama, carry out one of these conferences with him. So he's a really interesting character, and we met with him at in Scottsdale, Arizona, and we started talking about the abduction phenomenon and the credibility behind that whole discussion that's coming out of the UFO and ET related phenomenon that people speak of. And we spoke to Stan Friedman in this documentary at the same conference. We spoke to Kathleen Martin. We spoke to Travis Walton. Kathleen Martin and Travis Walton both claimed that they were abducted. Travis Walton probably has one of the most famous cases, and I don't know if you saw the fictional film that was based on his abduction case. Have you ever seen it, called Fire in the Sky?
Are you dressed in the film? I have not seen it. Oh, wait, Nat, I think I have. Sorry, you put me on the spot. I would have to look up my notes.
That's okay. I actually saw Fire in the Sky when I was at a sleepover, when I was, I want to say, maybe 10 or 9 years old, staying at a friend's place, watching movies in the basement at midnight, and it kind of cracked my mind open. I was pretty shocked and frightened after seeing it, but that movie presents the whole Travis Walton experience more from a horror or thriller aspect. You know, the way that they show these horrific scenes on board of a spacecraft, and they're doing surgical operations to him while he's completely awake and dragging him around the spacecraft by his legs and feet on his back, like just funny, freaky moments like that get burned into your brain when you're such a young boy. But Travis, if you watch the documentary, talks about the differences between his actual experience in real life and what he recalls happening to him and the film. And, you know, the Hollywood dramatization of what happened was required to be more of a thrilling experience for the viewer.
Of course.
But, yeah, of course. But, you know, he wanted people to know that it was thrilling enough to be abducted without having the ultra horror sort of gore moments and stuff that were experienced in the Hollywood version, as one might think if you were taken beyond your will somewhere and abducted. That would be quite thrilling. But Kathleen Martin, she was the niece of a couple that was very famous in the whole UFO realm, because they were the first sort of super famous account of abduction that happened in the United States, where the United States Air Force got involved and investigated, and authorities investigated, and so on and so forth. African American and a white woman, Betty and Barney Hill, and they stated back in the 1960s that they were driving down a road. They saw a light kind of shimmering in the sky following them, and they pulled over the car, and the light came closer, and then they had an abduction and experience. And that was kind of like the first super well-reported experience of abduction that happened in American history, that pervaded the minds of the Western world. Although there was many credible accounts of people saying that they were abducted, this was probably the most prolific case, because there was all kinds of things that were claimed to have happened that kind of became the boilerplate or the standard for the experience people were going to claim they had for years and years to come. Things like seeing UFOs and then having missing time. Missing time is, you know, let's say you were walking down the street and then all of a sudden you're at home and you weren't walking home before, you were going towards the city or something, and you look at, you know, your surroundings and you're like, wait a sec, where did all that time go between walking on the sidewalk until I landed here? And this is like part of the abductee story that's been quite well reported, where people say they had missing time. They basically woke up or appeared somewhere and all they could remember was something much before this experience. And it took them a long time to regain the memory of what actually happened to them. Other things that Betty and Barney Hill discussed when they, in this whole case, they said that they, you know, through hypnosis, that they uncovered some facts about their abduction where they saw their captors and they weren't human. They kind of had the, in their case, they stated that they, you know, you've heard of gray aliens before, I'm sure, right?
Correct.
That's pretty much the most iconic picture of an alien that anybody's ever heard of around the world. Grays have been spoken of to be part of abductions since day one of this whole phenomenon. They stated in their abduction experience that the beings did seem to have sort of oval shaped heads, elongated skulls, but they did have like extremely large almond shaped eyes. They weren't gray, but they didn't look completely human from their experience. And sometimes they said they did see grays. But genetic material was taken from them, which, you know, sometimes needles were put in them. And what else? I mean, yeah, and then they claimed that they were abducted over and over and over again. And that's also part of the abduction story, is that, you know, you're kind of tagged and then you're visited many times. So where do you go from there? Well, Kathleen Marden, who we interview in the documentary, she is the niece of Betty, that were this couple that claimed to have been abducted, and Kathleen says she's had abduction experiences too. And then part of that familial story is that apparently people who claim to be abducted, it happens in a sort of bloodline. It happens to other family members throughout history. Kind of like a living catalog or a study of a family and their genetics or something. So, yeah. It was really interesting to look at these different stories from these people that seem pretty credible, and to sort of put it all together. So if people wanted to understand, you know, what the whole idea of abduction is, I think the first sort of marred stigma that I heard when I was growing up about abduction or something, was people were always making fun of these poor people as being crazy and that they're claiming to be anal probed or something like that. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
I have.
Probed, right? And that's kind of like a really messed up thing, but that is a the way society copes with stories like this is to minimize it and make a joke out of it. And this documentary, we kind of wanted to present some of the best evidence and the best stories and the whole idea behind it. And yeah, just sort of see what that whole story is about.
So everybody you interviewed is from the one conference then?
Nope. We met Dean Alioto, who's a filmmaker. He actually made a horror movie on a family being abducted. And that was actually it was basically the first found footage horror movie that was ever made. This is before Blair Witch Project or, you know, all of those found footage films that have now become, I think they're kind of dead. No one really does them anymore, but, you know, Cloverfield was a great one too. But, this movie he released meant to be a, horror film, a fiction film. It didn't do too well. It was very independent. A lot of the script was ad-libbed, and it was a lot of the film was just shot in one continuous way, with a few edits here and there. And we interviewed him in his home in L.A. His story was pretty interesting because we wanted to sort of identify that the UFO folks, the people that are following this story as it evolves, you know, there's many different aspects and facets of the story around the world. They tend to take a lot of false information or fictional information in this case, and they take it as if it's true. So with his film, it didn't do quite well. It went to a distributor. The distributor did not very successfully market the film, and the originals for the film and everything were lost because the distributor's company was literally shut down when a fire broke out and burned down the place where the film was being kept. And somehow copies of the film had gotten out before that incident, and they started circulating in the UFO conference sort of circuits, and they started being sold and bootlegged, and they were being you know, the credits were taken off, the front of the sort of foreword was taken off, and it was being presented as an actual found copy of an abduction case to a family. And it very clearly was not real. He was going around, he was dispelling all the rumors, he was trying to tell the community out there, this is not real, this is not real, don't believe everything, yet people were screaming, you know, he works for the government, you know, and just getting lost in conspiratorial thoughts. And that's why we interviewed him, because we just wanted to look at how there are very interesting aspects to this, this story. And, we believe some of the stuff that's out there, but you know, there's stuff that's very clearly not real and shouldn't be taken as truth, but the community kind of eats up too much and it works against itself.
I absolutely agree with you. At times I feel the film gives me lots of theories, but I had little answers when I came away from the theories. Like, I find like people are great. Like, I'm listening to stories. I guess I could say I could believe the stories, but there's no proof, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, other than what they're telling me.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't want to say that anything is 100% true, because this, especially this idea, is quite fractured. It's quite nebulous. And if you believe, accounts of cover-ups and, protection of this truth from really getting out, then you also have to realize that you can't prove everything, because the truth can only unveil itself, you know, when the government or authorities come out and say outright, we're not alone.
Agreed.
But until that type of thing happens, you have people like us who are going out there to do sort of our own investigative research and journalism into the stories that are being told in regards to us not being alone. We present theories, we present the ideas. It's for you to decide whether it's true or not.
Yeah, which I like about your films. I think you set them all up that way. With Jaslowski, you did the same thing. Like, you got to decide for yourself. Now, as making this film, did you find anybody had footage for you, like from recent sightings?
Of abductions?
Of something, yes. Because, I mean, everybody has an iPhone now. Everybody has something to shoot.
Yeah, you know, I have other documentaries that cover more aspects of this, different aspects of the sort of UFO phenomenon. For example, I did one on Jaime Maussan, who's a Mexican journalist. He worked for 60 Minutes and, he did his own show for over 20 years in Mexico, basically covering UFO journalism in a serious way, too, because you can't really think of – I mean, now it's all over History Channel, right? There was Ancient Aliens, and since the advent of Ancient Aliens, there's been more and more shows like UFO Hunters and stuff like that. But those shows are more like – reality TV, and we both know reality TV is scripted. It's very, I would say it's not very reality, but it's interesting nonetheless. Jaime Maussan did actual UFO journalism where they would go with the camera crew to like people's homes where they stated they had UFO sightings or encounters and so on and so forth. And they would interview the people just like, ABC News or CNN. And he's been doing that for over 20 years. With him, with his documentary, I covered, that's part of the Beyond the Spectrum series. We have a lot of UFO videos in that documentary, and we cover how he got into UFO journalism, starting off as a sort of environmental activist working for the news agency 60 Minutes. And then he started covering Billy Meyer. Billy Meyer is kind of a famous Swiss UFO sightings guy. And then he just kind of went into the rabbit hole, and he carried on reporting on this around the world. And I flew down to Mexico City and I interviewed him for 3 days in his studio. We came out with Maussan's UFO files, which is his whole sort of investigative journalist history into this UFO phenomenon. And then I did one called Humanoids, which is,
we'll get there. We'll get there. Don't worry. We'll do them all. Just
okay.
Relax. You don't have to. I want to go back to this. Can we talk more? Is that okay?
Yeah.
The artwork. You do show lots of artwork of aliens constantly. Now, did you pay somebody to draw that, or did the people have that drawn up beforehand?
It depends. I mean, some of the artwork came from the illustrations that were drawn out of memory by Betty and Barney Hill or Travis Walton, in their abduction cases. And then with the sort of computer generated 3D art and such like that, I actually purchased some of that from stock image sites and so on. So, I mean, for example, Pond 5 has tons of this type of art, which other artists have made, and yeah, we had to pay for that.
Okay. Also, did you purchase an Alien Abduct Me shirt?
Did we purchase an Alien Abduct Me shirt? No. We present that at the starting of the documentary, just talking about how it's so incredible that this is spoken about all the time now, and people, it's part of pop culture now.
Now, do you feel after watching the documentary, do people come up to you and go, I've been abducted, I know somebody's been abducted, or that experience hasn't happened yet?
Actually, I get messaged on social media about it. I did get messaged on social media today about someone saying that they suffered from sleep paralysis since they were about 15 years old, and they state that since watching my documentary, they've started thinking about their experiences a bit more, and they're wondering if it might be linked to abduction somehow. It happens. We get messaged by people about this.
Now, do you ever think of exploring those further?
I think it's nice to connect with people that also have these experiences even today. But we have no plans to make like a sequel about abduction or anything like that. It's more so I just want to cover this aspect, this story, and do other stories that are different.
Now, I want to continue on. One of the arguments is, I think it's Kathleen Madden that argues that aliens are trying to stop us because they believe we are nuclear or going to be too nuclear.
Yeah. And so that...
How did you feel about that theory?
That's a theory that's been presented for a long time. Kathleen Madden, Stan Friedman is one of the individuals we interviewed in the documentary, and he's actually a nuclear physicist. He worked for NASA and for nuclear research programs for Westinghouse, for example. And when you look at the UFO wave that really started to hit the United States in the mid-1950s, throughout the 60s, 70s, all the way up until now, UFOs really, really started being reported en masse during the mid to late 50s. And right around that time, 1954, 1955, was the first nuclear bombs being dropped. You have Big Boy and Little Boy, Nagasaki, Hiroshima, and then bomb tests off the coast of Bikini Atoll. And that's really when reports of UFOs were starting to hit the scene in the United States. So some for example, there's a, can't remember his name, full name, but I want to say Dr. Jacobs. He's somebody, a whistleblower that kind of came forward. He was in another documentary that a really cool documentarian and a journalist by trade, James Fox, released this documentary called Beyond the Blue. And this man said that he was working for the American Air Force, and they were recording and doing tests of thermal nuclear warheads. These warheads were being shot into the sky, and they were dummy warheads, he believes, the ones that he was working with. They were just trying to see if the rocket could, you know, make its trajectory into space or whatever, what have you. And while he was recording with film, like traditional spooled film, this rocket in the atmosphere, he saw a saucer-like craft come into the shot, shot two beams at the dummy warhead, and the warhead kind of blew up and spun out, and then the UFO took off. And that footage was apparently confiscated by somebody like the CIA, somebody that was higher ranking than the Air Force personnel. And he's been on CNN talking about that. There's also another really prevalent case. I want to pull it up if I can, but it's about a nuclear missile silo that was shut down by a UFO.
Yes, they talk and about that.
I think it's Robert Salas.
Yeah, I think you're right. Salas. You do touch on it briefly in the film.
Yeah, UFO. I think it's called UFOs and Nukes. UFOs and Nukes, yes, Robert Salas. And he was actually working at a nuclear installation for nuclear missiles that are being housed in underground silos, missile silos. And he states in his book, UFO and Nukes, that when he was the commander of that base, that this is the Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana. His crew personally encountered UFOs. This happened in 1967 when the UFO was hovering over top of the Air Force Base. All of a sudden, they lost complete functionality of two of their thermonuclears and their silos. The UFO then disappeared. So I don't know. Do they have an interest? This is, you know, well documented, that story. Would UFOs, if they're observing this sort of violent behavior that we are carrying out against each other, and then they see the most powerful weapon we have, which is a nuclear weapon, would they be concerned about our survival? I mean, that's what we present in the documentary, and that's what has been presented to us, what we were told by many people in the field that have been reporting about UFOs around the world.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to stop you there, or we're going to run into the longest interview ever, and I won't be able to fit it in. So I'm going to move on to the fun questions for you.
Sure.
Because sorry about that. For your book, one book on film that made you want to be a director.
I read Reflections by Walter Murch. He's the basically the traditional film editor for a lot of Francis Ford Coppola's and THX 1180.
Oh, George Lucas.
George Lucas. So Walter Murch did Apocalypse Now and films like that. And I do a lot of the video editing for my films. I went to film school and learned how to do video editing. And in high school, I was starting to do video editing on consumer apps. Walter Murch is a pretty interesting guy. He would sit on set of some of these magnificent masterpieces of film that were being produced in the golden era of Hollywood. And he had a bad back, so he would like lie down and do his video editing in his editing suite. That's kind of the editing suite that I would dream of because I've got a bad back too. That's one of the books that influenced me the most because I realized through reading that book that you can be a director, a writer, and filmmaker as an editor. A lot of the times filmmakers, you know, editors are ignored as filmmakers because they just are the monkey that stitches everything together that was shot on camera, that was acted out by actors. But in my case, where I'm filming real life people and their stories, I'm kind of writing the story and stitching it together and gathering all this material. And, you know, that's more my style for my films because they're documentaries, of course.
Funny thing is, I've read that book too. Loved it.
Did you? Yeah, very cool, eh?
I've read that book. Question number two. One topic you haven't got to yet, but you might in the future.
I'm actually working on a sort of sequel to the Sasquatch documentary right now.
Awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, it's called, the working title for the film right now is called Sasquatch Among Wild Men. And Jeff Meldrum reprises his role as sort of the main interviewee. We flew out to Idaho to see him in his laboratory and look over a lot of the specimens of his research. And the whole idea for that documentary is that there are accounts of wild men, which are relic hominids or prehistoric sort of versions of man that are more ape-like or more man or Neanderthal-like, or sorry, more animal-like that people have seen and caught on video around the world, not just in North America. You know, the most prevalent case of wild man sightings is called Sasquatch or Bigfoot, but there's the Yeren in China. There's the Dev in areas like Iraq and Eastern Europe. There's the Yeti and yada, yada, yada. Lots and lots. There's the Orange Pendek in Indonesia.
We'll get to it. I know we will. Number last question.
I'll show
question.
You for sure.
Who are you thanking in your Oscar speech?
Okay. Who would I thank in my Oscar speech? Probably thank my partner, Monica, who's my fiance. She's supported me in telling my most recent stories, and I'd probably thank my friends most of all, the ones that have also supported my endeavors, whether it's just a pat on the back or you know, a text message saying great job, keep doing what you're doing, because these stories are not for everybody. A lot of people, you know, I'll go into house parties or go hang out with some peeps and they'll say, hey, what do you do? And I'll say, I make documentaries about really wacky stuff. And they'll just be like, I want to be on the other side of the room now. You know what I mean? So nice to have friends that get you.
Yeah, I get that. Before you go, tell everybody where they can find your film and your other films if you want.
Sure. The Beyond the Spectrum series you can watch for free if you have an Amazon Prime account. Also, you can check it out on TubiTV.com. That's a new streaming service that's free. And, iTunes or Apple Movies, Google Play, YouTube Red, to name a few more.
Thank you for your time, as always, Darcy. Have a great day.
Yeah, Simon, nice talking with you again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.